This is Discast Extra. Your source for freestyle audio exclusives.
Okay, everyone, welcome to another Discast Extra. Now, today's podcast features a very special interview which was recorded at the recent tournament. It's a huge event, Paganello. Sadly, I couldn't be there this year, even though it sounds like a fantastic event and I look forward to jamming there in the future. But John was there to soak up the atmosphere, do a little bit of competing, and also snatch this great interview with an all-time legend.
That's right. While in Paganello, I had the great honour and opportunity of speaking to Joey Hudocklin, who I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast will know was there at Paganello as a special guest for his first time in Europe. I'd like to thank, firstly, just Joey for doing this interview and, of course, all the people that assisted in the Hudocklin project, as it was named, Fabio and the Trieste crew, Rob Freed and people like that who were all there supporting Joey and helped make it a reality that he came. It was incredible to have him at Paganello. Pagan in general, actually, was a great event this year. Really enjoyed it. Had a great time. I think everyone did. The weather wasn't great for certainly days 1 and 3 of the competition. We ended up competing indoors. But all the same, we had some great jams, great rounds of competition, great parties and great community that freestyle has. It was really a brilliant event and a great range of players this year, and the standard of play was so high across the board in all rounds of competition. And just have the pit people like Joey there from America, the old-timers, and Rob Freed was just really made it the full circle of people there. Really, there's the young players, the future, and the old players of the past. It was really a great event. Of course, thanks goes out to Louie as well for all the hard work she put in for Paganello this year. A fully deserved well done to her. But anyway, yep, I won't hold you back anymore from this fantastic interview with Joey, the highlight of this Discast Extra. Joey talks about the starts of his career, how he started playing right through Team Bud Light and the Rose Bowl, his career highlights, and even talks about how he felt as he landed the famous tipping combo that many of you will have seen and watched in amazement. That's on the FBA homepage. He explains how he felt to do that combo. So here's the interview. Okay, I'm here now at Paganello 2008, and I'm joined by one of the legends of the sport, one of the greatest freestylers of all time, who's here in Europe for his first time, actually, for a freestyle event. It's Joey Hudocklin. So just to start us off, Joey, firstly, thanks for being here. And how and when did you start playing freestyle?
How? Because friends were into it, and I realized I was never going to be a professional basketball player, and I needed a creative outlet. I always had an artistic streak about me that prevented me from doing very well in school, so I needed an outlet, and it's instant gratification, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
So I had friends who were playing a little bit, and I saw the overhand wrist flip. And that intrigued me, a different way of throwing the disc than the normal backhand grip that everybody normally throws. And I thought it looked good, and I wanted to learn it. And I witnessed Kerry Colmar playing in 1975, which is when I started. Kerry was the inventor of the nail delay.
Really? Oh, wow.
And the inventor of the airbrush. And considering that that was in New York City was a trick, because the wind is not the beach. There's no beach wind in New York City. I think some people were learning to airbrush at the same time on the left coast in California. But for Kerry to do it, maybe even before they had started, probably simultaneous though. That it really inspired me, Kerry Colmar, and. I got to say, the moment that I decided to play freestyle full-time was doing a jumping scissor kick off a throw. a speed flow throw, which is really all we were doing at the time. A jumping scissor kick, landed, and that was it. I was hooked.
Wow, that sounds really cool. So I've heard a lot about Team Bud Light, and I heard you went on tour and even played professionally with this team for a while. So can you tell me more about how the team was formed and what exactly you did?
Yeah, well, the Bud Light team was formed by Crazy John Brooks in Kansas City. He and his two friends, Dan and Hal, had a friend who was in promotions for Anheuser-Busch. And Crazy John had this infectious personality, very charismatic, and they called him Crazy John for good reason. Upon first impression, everybody thinks he's absolutely crazy. So, and he lives up to it on a daily basis. So this guy who worked for Anheuser-Busch knew that there was a promotion opportunity, and they put together a routine. They weren't very accomplished freestylers, but they were very good promoters because Crazy was a very charismatic and he's a performer. So they didn't do very well in tournaments, and after a while, Crazy wanted to do better in tournaments. So he actually stole my partner, Chipper Bro Bell, from Santa Barbara, California. And he actually stole him and said, hey, you want to do some demos? So that one thing led to another. They started doing better in tournaments, but they still weren't winning. They needed an edge. And they were spending Anheuser-Busch was spending millions of dollars on the Bud Light team for travel,
really?
Per diem, and salary while on the road. So Chipper said to Crazy, why don't we see if we can get the third person on the team, and let's get Joey. Obviously, that would give them a better chance to it in the competitions. Chipper was a great competitor. Crazy wasn't so good yet. They couldn't crack over the line. They couldn't break the barrier of doing well in competition. So I think I inspired Crazy to improve his game a little bit. The bottom line is Anheuser-Busch took me on. They agreed that they would like to have the world champion Bud Light Frisbee team, yeah. Not just the Bud Light Frisbee team. That was nice. That would be a nice title. So that opened the door. I jumped in, and we, won some tournaments. We put together a routine. It got stale after a while. We got in trouble on the road, having too much fun, breaking windows. And after a while, AB decided that we weren't working out for them anymore, unfortunately. But it probably would have died out anyway. I'm not going to blame us, but that was a good. It was a good promotion. It was probably the best opportunity anybody's ever had to be on the road playing frisbee. We got paid a lot of money. And even for competitions, they paid us to go to competitions.
Really?
Yeah. So we had a good deal, and it was a lot of fun. We were treated like rock stars. We opened up for Stevie Ray Vaughan on stage, Starship, some other guys I couldn't quite... and Jan and Dean, the surf rock group, took us to China in 88. That wasn't as part of Bud Light, but we knew them because they worked for Bud Light, and we hooked up with them on the road sometimes. So that was a real fun time. Going to China was a very real experience.
Sounds amazing. Yeah. So did you actually sort of tour around the world then, not just in the USA, with Team Bud Light?
The only around the world we did was to China.
Right.
Okay. Otherwise, it was strictly in the United States.
Okay. What sort of years was that in, the Team Bud Light era?
Well, with me, it was from late 84 through early 88.
Right, okay. All right, cool. So another thing I'd like to talk to you about is the Rose Bowl, because I hear this quoted a lot, and I think a lot of European players don't really know exactly what it was. They hear about this Rose Bowl tournament, this magnificent event. Could you tell us a bit, what it was about?
The Rose Bowl was the culmination of the summer tour that WAMO set up as a promotion for the Frisbee. They were I don't want to say it, I don't want to put it in a bad light, but they used the players who were so excited to be playing to promote the sport, yes, but they weren't going to support the players. But the Rose Bowl was their promotion for the Frisbee. So in other words, the players would go to tournaments and you would get points for getting a top place in a tournament. And those points would go towards eligibility to compete in the Rose Bowl. So in those days, the tournaments all had... were all overall tournaments. So you had MTA, distance, maybe golf. It usually had three events. There might be freestyle, there might not be freestyle. There would be MTA and or golf, distance, accuracy, double disc court, and freestyle sometimes, usually, actually. But you would get points and you'd qualify for the Rose Bowl. If you qualified for the Rose Bowl, you'd get a plane ticket and a week's stay in Irvine, which is the campus University of Irvine, California. So they'd put you up, they'd feed you once or twice a day, I think. And then on the last day, you'd go to the Rose Bowl. And the Rose Bowl would get between 50 to 75,000 people in there.
Wow.
Not paying customers, but a lot of people, very excited. And there'd be some, you know, some famous people there to help promote it as well. And it was really exciting. It was really, really exciting. It didn't last because the players wanted to be compensated for our efforts, like any sport activity, you know, gets compensated in whatever way.
Yeah.
They didn't want to compensate us, and I think WAML made a big mistake. Here I'm getting political, and I've gotten in trouble for this before, but yeah, they made a big mistake. The whole sport could have grown exponentially. They were worried about a little bit of money that they could have paid the players to, you know, really become a true sport. Yeah. And the sport had to depend on the players at that point. After they pulled out their participation in the sport, and so that's what happened. But it was a great time. It's too bad it had to, you know, end the way it did. Though really,
but it was quite an intense experience playing live in front of that many people.
Yeah, it was very exciting. You know, unfortunately, in a stadium that size, the crowd can't fully appreciate what you're doing, especially in those days. Freestyle was different. There was more long throws and catches. The game wasn't so technical yet, so the game became more technical, it became less appealing for a large crowd, as my personal opinion. The game needs to go backwards in a way to regain the ability of a larger crowd to appreciate what's going on, because they don't care whether it's against the spin or if that's a skid or if that's counter or clock. They just want to be entertained. And the most entertaining thing is really the flight of the Frisbee. Why do people love to watch the dogs so much? Because they run and they jump and they catch the Frisbee after a long flight. Freestyle could learn a little bit from that, you know, learn to use the flight more. We could play in front of larger crowds more often, I think. But yes, it was very, it's a learning experience playing in front of a crowd. You have to focus in a different way than you do when you're jamming. So it takes a while to do that, unless you're just a natural performer, which I'm really not. But so I had to work at it.
Okay, cool. So have you got any particular career highlights over your long years of playing freestyle?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there's so much...
Many to choose from, I can imagine.
There's so much to talk about. I don't know where to start. You know, I mean, I'll stick to Frisbee routines, you know, like narrow it down to that, because I could go off in tangents and lose my own train of thought. So I'll stick to Frisbee routines. And you know, there's a few of them. I would have to say one of them was winning the first FPA Freestyle Championship in Rochester, New York in 79. It was the first one. Everybody was really psyched about it. I played as good as I could. Smoked a big joint after I walked off the field. And there was a picture of me doing that. That was fun. I'd have to say another one was winning the FPA World Championship co-op event in Minneapolis. And I believe it was 84, 85. And the reason it was so special for me was because the Coloradicals from Colorado at the time, Doug Branigan, Bill Wright, and Rick Castiglia, were in their prime. And they were very difficult to beat. And they were essentially on Dougie's home turf. Doug Branigan's parents lived nearby, so they were there, and it was very, they wanted that one bad. and in competing, you know, there's a certain, you know, you want to get that team, you know, you want to get that team. So anyway, I went without a partner. It was my first Bud Light season, and I was representing, because Chipper and Craze were off doing a demo, and I wasn't a part of it. I represented Bud Light. I picked up the two best players I could, which were Skippy Jammer and John Houck. And after working out with them for a half hour, hour, I said to them, you know, guys, we can win this thing. All we have to do is put together a decent routine, which is easy with those guys, because they're automatic. Their moves are like clockwork. And then when it's time to do our indies, we do our hardest moves, because we could out-difficult, quite frankly, we could out-difficult the Coloradicals in our indies. Their routine was hard to beat, but we fucking did it, and that was a real accomplishment, in my opinion. And one more was Chipper and I as a pair at the WIF, I believe it was the first WIF Diff tournament in Colorado, 87, I believe. And Chipper and I had learned how to do spontaneous performances. We weren't doing any routines. We were just doing spontaneous performances. And we had a guideline, an outline of how we wanted to put it together. But we didn't have any choreography. We had an ending catch. And we won. Everybody played so well in the finals. It was indoors. And all some classic teams were playing, and everybody played well. I have the video. Everybody played their best. And Chipper didn't show up till a half hour before we had to play. And I wasn't worried. I had faith in him. And we played to a piece of music by Jorma Kaukonen, who's my favorite musician. And we went with two drops, I believe, and won. And I found Chipper crying in the restroom afterwards. And I'm like, I was very happy. And I'm like, thinking about it now, I'm getting choked up, because it was seeing Chipper like that was, I'm like, wow, you know, how can you cry over this? This is fun. But now, looking back, I can see, yeah. So that, I'll leave it at that. Those were three good ones.
Wow, that sounds great. So you mentioned a few players there, like Chip Bell, Bill Wright, Larry Imperioli. Who were the other top freestylers of your generation, really?
I'm sorry, who were the...
The other great players of your generation in freestyle.
Well, you know, I don't want to leave anybody out, you know, because everybody, you know, I'd like to put it as more personal, because, you know, it's subjective, and you know, as to who is the best, you know, and this and that. It's a matter of opinion. You know, I'll put it as to who were the best players that I had the pleasure to play with on a regular basis. And Chipper, I would have to say, you know, was the best. He was very dynamic, difficulty, willing to take both spins, and a superior showman. He has charisma like almost nobody else. And of course, Donnie Rhodes took the game to another level. Donnie Rhodes decided that he wasn't going to mess around with the easy stuff. He was just going to do the hard stuff. And in the beginning, it didn't always work out for him. But all of a sudden, something clicked with him, and his game just shot. And it went into the stratosphere. He was doing combos like nobody ever has seen since. And unfortunately, he doesn't really play anymore. He had a game that, if you look at videos, that says it all. And personally, other than those two, I'd have to say that anybody who would put in a lot of time into working on both spins, which wasn't as common as it is now, I had much respect for. There were a few players, Rick Castiglia in particular was one guy who was always both spins, and I had a lot of respect for that. Of course, just doing one spin doesn't mean you can't have as much variety as in 5 minutes as someone who's doing both spins. In 5 minutes, you can get away with, with not having as much skill. Any player who would put a lot of effort into working both spins, in my opinion, had an edge as far as, and my respect,
So I've a bit of a specific question now. A lot of people I know in the modern day game have seen a video of you that's currently on the FPA site doing a tipping combo, which is regarded as probably the greatest tipping of all time. When you performed this, how did it feel? And was it a spontaneous thing? And how did you feel once you'd done it?
You know, that was a point in our routine where that was my time to do a tipping combo. My tipping combo was not choreographed exclusively. That's not the right word. I didn't choreograph my tipping combo, but I started it out with two or three moves, and then just take it where it goes from there. And how did I feel? I knew I had just done the best tipping combo that I had ever done in my life, anywhere in jamming or in competition or anywhere. And I knew it while I was doing it that it was the best one I ever did. I didn't seal it exactly how I wanted to, but nonetheless, I needed to seal it. So I caught it, and I knew right away. It's obvious from my body language after I catch the disc that I strut around a little bit like a rooster, in a hen house.
Yeah,
so
really pumped up.
I was pumped. Yes.
Yeah.
I knew it right away.
Yeah. Awesome. So this is your first time in Europe for a freestyle event, and how's the experience been so far? What do you think of the freestyle explosion in Europe?
Well, it's more than I expected. The level of play is higher than I expect. There's more players. I expected there to be a core number of players with a very high skill level. Turns out that almost everybody has a very high skill level, and I'm really shocked. I'm really excited for the future of the sport, because it needs young players to move forward. I think my job here is to sort of bring people back to basics a little bit, I think as the players learn a little bit more about the basics rather than pushing the difficulty so much, and I think that this is what a lot of the players want as well. I'm very honored to be here. I thank Fabio and Emanuele for and anybody else who put in any effort to helping me come here. I'm very humbled and very proud to be here, and I'm just so I'm very glad that so many people are amazed by this, because with Frisbee, some people just shrug their shoulders and walk by. Some people go, oh wow, look at that, isn't that cool, and walk by. Some people sit down and watch, casually, and other people go, wow! And that's who these guys are. These are the guys who go, wow. But the guys who go, wow, in the United States, don't stick around and put in any time to learn it. They go, oh, I'll never get that good. But these guys have the balls, and some of the young ladies here have the balls, to go out there and say, I'm going to do it. I don't care how good these old guys are who've been doing it for 30 years. I'm going to do it too. And I guess with the support of their, you know, peers, it makes it easier.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough when, you know, I try to support people who come up to me and want, you know, to learn how to play. I try to give them support and assistance. They don't stick around. I'm very impressed and proud of these kids here. I really am.
Excellent. It's great to have you here, Joey, in Europe. It really is. It's brilliant to meet you, and I think everyone feels the same too. So,
well, John, it's been a pleasure to meet you. I'm very impressed with your game as well. The first day jam we had on the beach, I could see right away that you have a very good touch and are relaxed, and there was a strong wind, and I don't know what kind of wind you have in England, but whatever you're doing, keep it up.
Excellent. That means a lot. Thank you very much. So, cheers for talking to us, Joey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Discast Extra. For more information, log on to ukdistime.co.uk.